Hey, everybody, what is going on? Welcome back once again to a brand new episode of Sweeten Up Podcast, season number 2, episode number 73. I am your host, Jeff Spencer. Thank you so much for taking some time to join me today. I greatly appreciate it, whether you have for an entire season or you are today for the very first time. We appreciate it so much here on the podcast. However, if you are just joining us for the first time, take a look back at our library of 72 episodes anytime you want, anywhere you subscribe to the show. As always, if you like what you hear on the podcast today, please be sure to tell all your friends and subscribe to the show anywhere you get your podcasts so that you never miss a future episode. You can find the podcast on Instagram and Facebook at Sweeten Up Podcast. With that being said, my guest on the show today is celebrity chef Adam Greenberg. Chef Adam Greenberg is a Connecticut native, a four-time CHOP champion, a Beat Bobby Flay winner, previous owner of the Coconut Club in Washington, D.C., and spent a decade behind Barcelona and Bar Taco. With all of his Food Network wins, he has been crowned as the all-time winningest contestant the Food Network has ever had, with a record of 5-0, and also is occasionally featured as a Food Network judge. We had an incredible, in-depth conversation live in the Sweeten Up studio in Danbury, Connecticut, and trust me when I tell you that you will not want to miss out on this one. So, without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, sit back and relax, because here he is, my friend and a world-class human being, the wonderful Adam Greenberg. Joining me on the podcast today, live here in my apartment in Danbury, Connecticut, for a beautiful, wonderful in-person interview. My favorites, as I was telling this lovely individual across from me, the one and only celebrity chef, Chef Adam Greenberg. And Adam, thanks so much for coming by.
Hey,
this is great. We've been talking for so long.
I'm blushing. We're on. We're live.
Yeah.
We're live.
Yeah. We were chatting for such a long time, just, you know, getting acquainted and got a lot in common.
That's
and
nice.
it was a good conversation.
Funny story real quick is,
yeah.
So I met Guy Fieri once.
Oh, cool.
And he told me that when he was on the Leno show, Leno would come out and he would come and talk to every guest before the show. And he talks to them for like 5 to 10 minutes in their dressing room or wherever they are. And he says, the reason I do that, one, so it's friendly, and two, you break the ice so that when we start the show, it's like we've already gotten all that shit out of the way. So
right.
We got our shit out of the way.
Nice.
Ron, are we allowed shit?
Is we did. Okay? Shit
okay.
is allowed.
Shit is allowed. Okay. So we got that out of the way, and we're ready to roll.
You That's know? It.
So here we are.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's good to be here, man. Thanks
That's
for
That's cool. Yeah. Yeah, no, thank you.
I'm tired of Zoom podcasts, so I figured I'd come say hi.
Hey, listen, you know, I agree. Zoom is Zoom. It is handy for when folks are just super busy, and it's hard for them to even step out for a second, or just whatever the case may be, or maybe totally. People don't feel comfortable getting together yet. But, you know, it's been great having things get a little better on the COVID front, totally. and having people be able to come by. I've had a decent amount of in-person guests, I would say, so far in season 2. So
nice, man.
And it's great to see you. It's
Pleasure.
Great to see you.
Pleasure's all mine.
Looking
it's
great.
Good. Thanks,
Looking
bud.
Great. And
thank you too.
Thanks for taking the drive down. From,
Appreciate you wearing the Hartford Whalers
from the Hartford
sweatshirt.
Area. Nice. I did it for you because I saw you wearing some Hartford Whalers memorabilia on your Instagram
nice.
Page. So I was like, all right, I got to wear some Hartford Whalers gear. Because my mom was a Skybox manager for 8 years, and awesome. I got a lot of hard, you know, I showed you my memory.
Shout out to mom. Shout out.
Yeah. Shout out to mom. Love you, mom.
R. Love you, mom. R.I.P.
Yeah. But
in honor of, we've got Focal Banger IPA today. So if you want to sponsor, the dealer, Alchemist, if you're listening.
Yeah, exactly.
We've got cookies. We're good here.
Exactly. Exactly.
You know? So yeah, it's good to be here, man.
Exactly.
I feel right at home.
That's good. Yeah. I'm glad. I'm glad.
Thanks,
but so listen, man, let's get right into it.
Sure.
And, you know, one of the questions I like to start with, and I'm sure everyone listening knows where I'm going here, is given last year, the events of last year, which were so unprecedented, of course, you know, how was it for you getting by such a difficult time on a business level, a personal level, and how did you cope with everything that was going on around you?
Yeah. I heard getting by and cope out of those, out of that. I'll be honest with you, like getting by and coping was literally my last year. It was the toughest year of my life. I had a restaurant, Coconut Club in DC. We had to close it. We had every intention of trying to reopen in the spring, but, you know, we learned some things about the concept and kind of the timing of it and how it is a very seasonal concept. You know, Coconut Club was, you know, island vibes, like
beautiful
pina coladas, cool design. Thank you.
Beautiful.
And, you know, just the timing of COVID, the location, it just didn't work financially. So, you know, sometimes you got to know when to fold them, you know, and that's part of life and part of business. And I'm fortunate enough to have some really great mentors and people around me that are like, as much as you want to try to keep this going, it's like any investment. You can just keep pouring into it because you emotionally want to do that.
Right.
But you got to go like, oh my God, we're just like digging a hole and digging a hole and digging a hole. And that's kind of like, are we really out of COVID yet? And like, no. And from a business perspective, and most restaurateurs will tell you, no, we're not. So, you know, we kind of, we looked ahead and said, if this were an instant fix within the next 3 months, sure, we're going to get right back to this. But we knew it was going to be years before we ever really regrouped. So unfortunately, I had to close the restaurant. My wife and I moved back from DC to the Connecticut area where I'm from. And, you know, it was tough, like coping with it, dealing with it. You know, I'm pretty open about this. Like, I suffer from depression my whole life. So dealing with it was a real challenge. And like anything, like you kind of, once you get out of it, or not get out of it, but once you build yourself back up, you feel, you know, like you can sort of accomplish anything and then move forward. And that's kind of where I'm at now. It's been a long fucking year, but it's like, did a lot of walking, a lot of exercise, a lot of stuff for the mental health. Thankfully, I have an awesome wife and supportive and, you know, just thank, you know, like most marriages, like it wasn't an easy year last year, especially for her to see us close the restaurant and things that, you know, she's supporting, but here we are. And like, we're still alive. We're getting through it. And, you know, that's the truth. You know, it's not this rosy story of like, you know, triumph and, you know, the restaurants crushed it. Like we did a lot of things I'm really proud of. And, we serviced the neighborhood in DC when we were like going through COVID, and we turned the restaurant into a market, and we had a lot of cool things going on. So, you know, we didn't close because we sucked at our jobs. We closed because there was a pandemic, which you can't really plan for. But I'll tell you, like, it's brought us home. And I know a lot of people live life like everything happens for a reason. And I would say, like, we're home, and we feel good about that. We're surrounded by family. And then I'm actually partnering on a restaurant in West Hartford, so I'm sure we'll get to that. But, you know, kind of like anything, there's a fall and then there's a rise. So that's where we're at. We're on the rise now. It took a while. But I think for everybody and anybody listening that's out there that's like, man, I had a shitty year too, but I have to keep telling everyone how great I am. It's like, it's okay. As I know, like, this is cheesy. Like, it's okay to not be okay. But like,
right.
It's okay to just be like, you know what? Last year fucking sucked. Like,
yeah, of course.
My relationship sucked last year. Like, yeah. I was buried in myself or whatever it is. And I'm not, right, you know, speaking for anybody else. But I think last year taught a lot of people like perspective. And it did for me, like how we go forward in our lives and what things are important to you. And kind of like, I know the answer to life is those things, like, what the hell's the point? So like, we all make money or do whatever. Like, what is your goal? What is the point of it? Those things all came to the forefront, and you realize like, you probably don't need as much, or you probably didn't, whatever it is. We all learned to live a little differently through COVID. I wish people, you know, the one thing that's funny is like, at least from the restaurant side of things.
Sure.
I think we all thought people would come out of COVID nicer. And that's not the truth. Like,
yeah,
it's fucking crazy. And the stories I'm hearing, and like, I'm almost thankful to not be in a restaurant right now because of just the horror stories of people not truly understanding what this lack of hiring pool or lack of help and why things take longer, or there just seems to be this real lack of empathy for people, which I thought that would be different. And, you know, just shout out to all my restaurant industry people that are just going through it, or really any industry for that matter, of like, you're short on help. And, you know, I have a buddy who owns like a construction company that can't even find truck drivers. So I shouldn't just speak for the restaurant industry. It's just the one that I know the best. So, but anyway, that's a loaded question. It's a little sad, but with sadness comes the comeback. And, you know, I think like anything, we all rise up, the country will get better. Things will get better. Businesses will get better. And then, hopefully everybody's still here to see it and live in it and have a good time. And
yeah,
you know, that's, you know, for me, what's opportunity will come out of it. It's just, you gotta like, when you're in it, you're like, oh shit, this is, you know,
yeah,
this is COVID. We're all in our house. Like, what are we going to do?
Yeah.
And now, like, you know, I think some people are just creating more restaurants or more, you know, it's just a way to get out of it. So, that's the short end of the story, but happy to be back in Connecticut doing it.
Yeah.
And,
Happy to have you back. It's good.
Thanks, man.
Yeah, definitely. Been following you for a while, and it's been great to see everything that you've been doing. You know, last year was wild.
Yeah.
I mean, what a wild story.
I mean, now, like literally you just see like a meme on Instagram and it's like Katz's Deli was out of pastrami for the first time in 50 years.
Yeah.
Like, that's not a joke.
Yeah.
That's like just the shortage supply of everything.
Yeah.
And sometimes there's no rhyme or reason. Like you go to order like a sheet pan.
Right.
And they're like, sorry, it's 12 weeks. They're like, what? It's 12 weeks to get a sheet pan. And then, you know, you can't get, so there, it's not like it's just chicken or it's just, it's everything. But sometimes, like I said, there's no rhyme or reason why certain things are. It's just there's a supply chain problem right now, and we're living in it. It's like, I know we all want to get back to normal, but it never seems like we're like, maybe, you know, obviously deaths and COVID cases, those go down. But then like now we have a shortage of supply. And then so it's just like one problem just dominoing after the other. But hopefully, you know, things start to come back and things can become just a little more affordable for people too, because that's, at the end of the day, that's what sucks, is like what people a lot of times don't understand is like we're all in the hospitality industry because we like to take care of people. We love being there for people. And I don't know, I can speak for myself. Like I'm an insecure dude who loves when people likes him. I'm 42. I can say that and like confidently just be like, fuck it. Right. So like, I didn't know that in my 20s. I just was like a sad, like, you know, sensitive dude who wanted to be liked. But the restaurant industry for me was something that like, it gives me that instant gratification. I can look out in a dining room and see someone having a good time in my restaurant. That makes me feel good. So like, I'm the kind of person who wants to make people feel good all the time. I'm like a million other people in the restaurant industry that literally just do this because they want to make people happy. And it's really hard right now to do that when you got to charge like, you know, whatever amount of money you got to charge because it costs you three times, you know, like gloves and plastic. Like, it's just nuts what stuff costs right now. So a lot of restaurants are just getting by. They're doing their best. Be patient. You know, I hope a lot of people are listening that aren't in the restaurant industry, so they understand what, like, you go over to that server who you know is just, and you throw them a little extra tip. And not even the money, but just like, hey, I know what you're going through right now. Like, I'm so sorry. Like, thanks. Don't worry about us. We're good. Like,
yeah.
I did that last week at a restaurant in a random, actually in New Hampshire, like a random place with my parents. And it was like 40 minutes to get drinks. Like, I just went up to the server and was like, hey, we're cool. Like, I'm in the industry. I just want to let you know, just don't worry about us. Like, I don't want you to even, like, we'll get our drinks when we get them. We'll get our food when we get it. And they honestly, like, the food came real quick after anyway. But point was just, I just wanted, you could just see the stress. The server didn't show up.
Oh, I see it.
And they're short-staffed.
Yeah.
So the best you can do is just, like, sometimes just pat someone on the back, even when, you know, they're just, like, in hell, rather than argue and, you know. But anyway. That's kind of the COVID thing. We can talk about more positive things and stuff.
Yeah, no, but, you know, I
that's
see
reality,
it.
Right?
Like, no, you know, I see it. Everything it you're talking about, yeah. I see it. When I go out, I experience similar situations, and I'm totally just, you know, sometimes maybe someone I'm with gets a little frustrated or just whatever, and I'm like, hey, you know, don't worry about it. It's a difficult time right now. And
my favorite is people walk in and they're like, well, I see that table's empty right there. Like, why can't I sit there?
Yeah, it's
like,
because there's not enough.
You can sit there if you'd like to take your own order and go cook your own food too.
Yeah, it's just
people just don't understand. And I know that it's hard to see that sometimes, but it's just the reality.
Just because there's an open table doesn't mean that have the ability to serve you and cook for you.
And that's why you see a lot of places doing the QR code or doing, because it's a little more self-service.
Yeah.
So that you can help yourself, because they want to run a different kind of service so that they can get you. What do they need to get you? But you're not going to have that intimate service that you're used to getting, depending on the restaurant and all that, you know.
You know, and you touched on a bunch of different things, and one of them is mental health, and I appreciate you for sharing that. And I've seen you talk about it on Instagram, and I think it's important because, there's a big stigma around it, and, you know, I feel like it's good to get it out there, and, you know, I definitely suffer from depression too, and have for a while, and you know, especially after losing my mom, it's been tough the last couple of years. So
I can imagine.
I appreciate that. So thank you for that.
Yeah, I used to like kind of shake when I talk about it, because it's a little.
Oh sure.
You're being vulnerable about something that's like, am I just talking about myself right now? Right? Like, who the fuck cares about me? And I don't mean that like, I know my family cares about, you know what I mean? And most anybody knows what I mean when I say that.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Really, who cares like what I do or like, you know, what's going on in my day? Like, everybody has a shitty day. Like, suck it up, dude. Like, who cares? You know, but it's crazy how many times I've posted and you know, sometimes I do, I check it twice and I'm like, should I say this? Like, do I need to say? And then I'll get like 15 messages of being like, thanks for sharing. Thanks for sharing. And honestly, like without being cliche about it, it's really for that just one person that feels comfortable. And then of the 15 people that said something, imagine how many people didn't, but actually said, hey, like maybe if that happens to him, not like I'm some superhero or chef or a celebrity, like none of that shit matters. But if one person just resonates with, oh, like this guy always looks happy and like he's making a ton of money and stuff, like that's not reality. And it's like, no, it's not. Like I'm broke as hell. I'm depressed a lot of the times and I'm working on it, you know? And like, that's the fucking reality of it. And yeah, it's like, but I work hard and I love what I do. And like, so there's other things you can do in your life to make yourself happy.
Right.
But like there's shitty days and it is, but like I've had so many hills and valleys in my life that it was hard to talk about at first. And then, you know, I started talking about it a couple of years ago, maybe two or three. And then like, obviously now society has like accepted it to understand that. And I just think the more and more and more we talk about it, the more it just makes anybody feel comfortable.
Yeah.
And I, you know, what's messed up. And like, I feel like I'm, man, between COVID and this, it's like sad story pod today. But my wife and I were going, unfortunately, in the Hartford area, one of our industry folk kid that we worked with, 30 years old, apparently committed suicide the other night. And people posted about it. My wife and I were talking about
I did see that.
Justin is his name.
I did see that.
So
that's awful.
He's a good kid and like, you know, just great energy and sure, he had his own problems and things going on in his life. And I didn't know him intimately all the time, but I loved when he'd show up to work.
Right.
A lot of people know him well up in the area.
Yeah, a lot of people were.
Yeah, Justin Seltzer.
Yeah.
And my wife and I started listing off names of people that have died that we've worked with in the industry. And then I listed off who I've known. And it was at least like 30. And like, I've worked in the industry 22 years. Like that number is ridiculous.
Yeah.
And of those 30, most of them were suicides. So like, you know, all I'm saying is like, if anybody feels shitty and they see a post and says, wow, I also feel shitty about my day sometimes. And it's like, they just think twice about anything. Like I, fortunately for me, like I've never wanted to kill myself. Right. So like, I feel fortunate in that regard. Now I know what it's like to dig into a deep hole and want to sleep all day so you can shut your brain off, which I'm sure a lot of people can relate with. But for this, it's like, just, I hope somebody sees it and just thinks twice about it.
Yeah.
You know, if anybody feels shitty, like there's always somebody who loves you or wants to hear from you or talk to you that you, you just didn't know. And that's what happened in this case. Like, I'm sure he didn't realize how many people, like he probably hasn't talked to me in years, but how much like we appreciated that energy when he was around. And, you know, who knows? It could have been a conversation that helped him or, you know, whatever it is. Right. So.
Well,
that's all it is, just talking about it and trying to feel comfortable. So
definitely my condolences to everyone who knows, his family, his friends. That's awful.
I'm sure a lot of people in our industry can understand
things
that.
Like that. And so,
you know, our industry is full of different walks of life and a lot of different people.
Yep.
So I'm sure a lot of people hearing this have their own restaurant story and somebody that they've lost. So, you know, it's restaurant industry and mental health, they go very hand in hand sometimes. And I think it's important we talk about it more in this industry because it's, people need to talk about it.
Definitely.
So, yeah.
So I appreciate that.
Yeah, man.
And, you know, another thing that you touched on was Coconut Club closing.
Yeah.
And, you know, so sorry about that.
It's all right.
I, you know, never got there personally, unfortunately, but just from the photo.
I'll try to do some pop-ups up here and bring it, you know, once the weather.
But just how it looks.
Once the weather comes. Yeah, it was beautiful. It was so cool.
I was like,
it was great.
Whoa.
I loved it.
What part of D.C.?
It was over by the Union Market area, which is on the northeast side.
Okay.
It's an up-and-coming area. It's not quite built out yet, so it's...
So that's not Georgetown, right?
No, complete opposite side of D.C.
Okay, okay. Yep. All right, sorry.
Yeah. No, no worries, man. Yeah, it's an area where, like, if...
It's been a while.
You know, if you went to D.C. 10 years ago, you wouldn't have gone to that area. Like, you wouldn't even have known of it.
Oh, okay.
So it wasn't even developed, like, nothing. And then they built the food hall over there. And so it's coming along.
The outside of the Coconut Club kind of looked like you'd be in like
it was a warehouse.
Miami
or
California. Yes. That's where I thought it
that's
was.
That's what we did.
And I'm like, D.C., did someone tag this wrong? Like,
I was
confused.
That was awesome. We wanted to try to bring that.
That's so cool.
It was cool. I'm glad you see it that way.
Yeah, that's cool. And and another thing you touched on was, you know, how people have been really difficult at restaurants, you know, with the time and food quality, just whatever it might be, Karen's, I guess you would say, right? Yeah. I don't know. And an incident happened with a friend of the podcast, Chef Carlos Perez, over at the corner in Litchfield. A lady left a huge long review about how the grilled cheese is just two slices of like Kraft singles, and then she said things, you know, I thought this was Chef Carlos, you know, the famous Chef Carlos Perez's place, and how could he stand for this? And pretty big long review, and I think it was on Facebook, on some site or something like that, or maybe it was a Yelp review. I don't know, one of those.
Yeah.
And so what he decided to do was, well, he posted like, you know, be nicer, like you gotta be nicer to us. It's a difficult time, which, you know, obviously most people who follow him understand and know.
Sure.
And, you know, most people with a brain. And, so what he decided to do was he had a special pop-up one night. I was like a Tuesday or Wednesday night, and he made like, I think it was 5 to 6, maybe 7, like specialized grilled cheeses. And it was a grilled cheese pop-up event. And he did all these different kind of grilled cheeses, and a bunch of people came out and supported him.
No way.
Yeah, and he turned it into a positive.
That's funny. That's so great.
You know, we were talking about so much negative, negative into a positive.
Nice, Chef.
And he's a total pro.
Nice move, Chef. And, like it.
Yeah, and he's awesome. He's great over there at the corner. And in fact, he was on Guy's Grocery Games, and the episode comes out, I think, next week.
Yeah, he posted out about it today, actually. I think
something like that. So yeah. I'm really
next
excited.
Next Wednesday, 11/24, I believe.
So check that out, guys.
That's awesome. Yeah.
Check that out. Check, you know, because this episode will be out. So check that out.
Support it.
Yeah. So that was just another thing that I thought was pretty interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. That's great.
But so, anyways, take me back. Where are you from originally? What was your upbringing like? And sort of, you know, were you always interested in cooking and being a chef in the industry at a young age, or is it, or was there something else that you were doing? And and how did it all come to be to sort of what, you know, what you do today?
I'm the first chef in my family, so I'll put it that way.
Okay.
As far as professionally speaking, I gotcha. Didn't grow up around this being a profession. Long story short, I am from West Hartford, Connecticut originally.
Nice.
Grew up there. Sort of just went to middle school, and then I went to Suffield Academy.
Or as Dr. Mel would say, West Hartford.
There you go. Nice. West Hartford. So I grew up there, went to high school, went to Suffield Academy up in Suffield near the airport. I wanted to play baseball in college and somehow thought I could do that. And as you look at me, I'm 5'7", and that just wasn't going to happen. I'm 5'6". 5'6", 220. So anyway,
no one's
professional
judging
sports,
here.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So professional sports were not in the future for me. So I went to Syracuse for undergrad for a year.
Oh, awesome.
Partied. Donovan McNabb was our quarterback.
Yes. Those are some good times.
We beat Tom Brady at Michigan, the
no
second game
way.
Of the year. Tom Brady came in for an injured Drew Henson.
You witnessed all this stuff?
I was there. We drove my second week of college or something, third week, we drove. Some of my friends already been there, so it was like they were sophomores and we were going to drive up. So long story short, I never even went to class. I just had a blast, okay?
Van Wilder?
Really awesome time.
Yeah.
And my parents, after that year, were like, well, that was a waste of money and time. And honestly, like, I remember, and I always tell this when I tell the story, is like, I remember someone asking me, like, what are you doing in college? Like, what are you majoring in? And I just was like, what am I doing here? Like, what am I? And like, I tell this in a way and it makes it sound like I'm some saint who was like, Mom, Dad, I'm wasting your money. Like, it didn't happen that way. It really was a conversation of like, do you want to go to college and do this? And are you going to continue to dedicate yourself to this? And I really, you know.
Right.
I just wasn't going to do that, and I wasn't good at it, and I didn't deserve it, to frankly speaking. It's like, I didn't have the drive, and here's somebody's giving you an opportunity. You know, there was no reason to waste it. But like, at the end of the day, the parents made the decision, right? Like, it wasn't like I was some saint. It's like, let me save you some money, and, you know, we'll do this. And, you know, I was just a kid who, you know, I thought going to college was just my God-given right. So
right.
I just was going along in life, and this is it.
So that's what they tell you when you grow up.
You know, I was raised... my mother remarried, and my stepfather since I was 5. My dad, same stepmother, same stepfather, whatever, right? So it's been in my life forever. So he basically, I got home, and he was like, all right, hey, real world, go get a fucking job, you know? And I'm like, all right. And I worked in high school. Like, I get it, you know? I worked at Hartford Golf Club, and
cool.
I had, like, odd-end jobs and stuff like that. But like,
nice.
My stepfather was an amazing at-home cook. So
nice.
When I was growing up, he taught me at, like, 10 years old how to use a pizza stone. So I could go in the freezer and grab frozen pizza and throw it on the stone. But the pizzas he would make. So like on Sunday, it was like cooking day. Like we would watch football and he would make sauce, even though we're not Italian. But it was always a cooking day. So he would make pizza dough, make pizzas, freeze them. And then I could eat those after school. So I was kind of known as the kid with like the chefy dad, you know, that kind of thing. So I was around food and I knew I really enjoyed watching him cook and kind of just like hanging out with him and watching football. Like that was, you know, I loved it.
That's awesome.
So when I came home from Syracuse, I went and, you know, I used some connections. My family knew the owner of the Max Group up in the Hartford County. And he got me a job at Maximia, which is in Avon, which ironically is where I live now. It's still open. I think it's been open 25 years now.
Wow.
Italian spot, local sort of neighborhoody joint.
Nice. I got to check that
out. And that was my first job ever, like plating desserts. I was an 18-year-old kid. I cut myself. I was at the emergency room like a week in for, you know, bad cut. But what I always say to people when I tell this story is it was the first time in my life I was around people that weren't like me. And it was a real awakening for me in life of being like, oh, wait, not everybody grows up and goes to college. And I know this sounds so obnoxious, but like I was a privileged, I was a middle class family that I was privileged to have the opportunity to go to college or to have opportunity. But you don't know that when you're living in it because you're surrounded by people that are like you. And then you go and you work in a restaurant and it's like people from Yemen, Guatemala, El Salvador, Mexico, Cuba. This, my buddy from Cuba, I worked in Florida, tells me, no joke, he would have rather dove back in the ocean and let the sharks eat him than go back to Cuba when he escaped. Like, you meet people with stories and with culture. I speak Spanish now. You know, things that, what I always say is that this industry really taught me about life. And I try to give back to the industry that gave me so much. And that's the real story of why I do what I do, which is like, I was a white kid who grew up in West Hartford, Connecticut, and had all this opportunity. And instead, I became a chef. But what it taught me was that like, life isn't just given to you. You have to fucking work for it. And believe me, my parents did. Like, my mother's been in real estate for 40 years and still works. She hustles. She was out signing contracts on Sunday nights. My stepfather worked in the paint business forever. My dad was a mattress salesman. So I'm not talking like I was just given something like a little bitch, but like what it was is that I never really got it. So it's like growing up and your parents telling you to do something and you just never get it until you experience it yourself. Well, until I got in the restaurant industry, I never experienced what like, hey, go earn yourself, like go live and learn how to live. And you learn quick because these people want to crush you because you've been given opportunities they've never been given. So the people I worked with hated me in the beginning because they were like, oh, you know, the owner, good. Like go peel fucking potatoes and shut your mouth, you know? And like, there's some shit I won't even talk about that was done to me. Like when I first started that, like, would never happen today physically or whatever, but they picked on me. They were bullying me, but I came back every day and I loved it. Like it was like being part of a sports team in this weird way. Even though I was the kid getting punked on, I knew it was like I had to earn my stripes. And that was what this industry did for me. And that's what it was. You know, I started in 99 or 2001. I worked in restaurants for a year and a half, and then I went to Johnson & Wales, and that I paid for.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, so, did you go to culinary school?
Yeah, so I ended up going to culinary school because Billy Grant, who owns Brico up in West Hartford, he's Connecticut chef legend.
Yeah.
I worked with him for about a year before I went to culinary school.
Oh, very cool.
And, you know, I just looked at him and was like, man, like he just looks the part. You know, he's got the chef coat on. He comes to work. Like, I want to be that guy. And at the time, they were suggesting go. So I went to Providence to Johnson & Wales. I looked at CIA, but there's nothing to do up there. Like, there was nowhere to work, which is up in Poughkeepsie.
Oh, yeah.
Culinary Institute.
Yeah, I know CIA and, well.
Just for people listening, in case they didn't know.
Yeah, yeah.
CIA, not the Central Intelligence Agency.
Yeah, yeah.
I would not have been accepted for the CIA. But anyway.
No, I think you'd be great.
So I went to JW.
I think you'd be great. No, I'm just
So I went to Johnson & Wales in Providence. There were restaurants there, so I worked in restaurants. So I would go to work. I would have, what, school, I think was 6 or 7 in the morning till 1, and then I'd work from 2 p.m. till midnight in a restaurant. And that was my life for, you know, 2 years there, and then I never stopped. I went and worked at Gramercy Tavern in New York City for about a year and a half after school. I was living in Long Island with my ex-girlfriend and commuting an hour and a half, 4:30 in the morning to get to Gramercy at 6 in the morning. Worked my way up a little bit there, and
Gramercy. Yeah. Is it still there
in New York City? Yeah, Gramercy Tavern's one of the.
I feel like one of our past guests worked there too at one point.
Oh, I'm sure. Oh. Yeah, you had. I think you have Nick Marchenko on yet?
No.
Yeah, he was there when I was there.
Oh, okay.
He was meat roast and corner. He was above me.
I keep hearing about it, but I haven't.
He's
been.
Great.
Oh, I gotta get out.
but yeah, you could have had. I mean, there's been a lot of chefs that have come from there. I don't know if Storch worked there. He might have. But something tells me he didn't also.
That's cool.
But yeah, you know, a lot of chefs have worked there.
That's cool.
At their time or another.
Very cool.
And then just like moving on down the line, I've been in Providence and then I was in New York City and then, I was at the Capitol Grill in Florida and in New York City. And then, Barcelona found me and that's kind of like full circle.
My girlfriend's favorite.
I was married before when I was younger. And then, so like kind of in a past life, I was with Capitol Grill and then, Barcelona found me and
yeah, great place.
They have the location in West Hartford, so I started with them and I was with Barcelona Group / Bar Taco, like off and on, like it was almost 9 years, like 8.5, 9 years.
I had no idea that they were the same thing.
Yeah, started by the same group.
I had no idea.
Yeah, I started with Barcelona. I think we had 4 locations at the time. And then we increased to like 7, 8, 9, and then a Bar Taco might have come, Porchester. And then I started helping when they opened Westport Bar Taco.
Is that how you know Dan Cardo, sort of? Because he was working
Yeah, Cardo
with them?
And I actually lived together in an apartment.
Oh, we're going to have to get into that.
In Reston for a hot minute.
Oh, cool.
We were like passing in the night kind of. Like
okay.
So he was in Reston for Bar Taco, and I was in Reston for Barcelona.
Man.
So we'd pass in the night a little bit.
It's like a farm, 2 goats just living together.
Oh, yeah. It was. I mean, if you've, like, honestly, most people probably listening to this have probably worked for Barcelona at some point. So,
okay.
You know, you come from the string. But yeah, yeah. Cardos,
cool.
He was with Bar Taco for a while
as
they were growing. I love Dan. He's an awesome, awesome guy. Great to work with. And his restaurants are obviously just really, really solid food.
See that Thanksgiving sandwich?
Yeah, man. He's nuts. It's awesome. It's just such good food. It's good.
Anyway.
He's got the moist maker for all your friends, fans out there.
And he's best friends with Marty from Stop and Shop.
There he is.
In fact, Stop and Shop DM'd us on Instagram and said
they
liked the episode.
No way.
Yeah.
That's so funny.
So he's got a friend. He's got a friend
They've
for
got
life.
Marty's cousin lives up in Avon, where I'm from. And like I've seen him. He doesn't have the brows like this, like Cardos is Marty though.
That's hilarious.
So my guy looks a little strange.
Yeah.
I'll have to send a picture shout out next time.
You should.
We need to get an oak hat. And put it on his cousin up in Avon.
That'd be perfect.
Yeah. You know, then every Marty and, you know, Marty's cousins.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
And for those who don't know what we're talking about, you got to listen to the episode with Dan Cardos 2 episodes ago. Amazing.
And if you just stop by any Stop and Shop and ask for Marty.
Yeah.
And they'll let you know.
Yeah.
You know,
and Marty will call
He's
Dan.
Usually walking around the store, checking things out, making sure everything's in line. He's really cool.
Yeah.
He's good.
But yeah, man, working for Barcelona. That's so cool.
Yeah. So Barcelona, like, listen, the best way to describe it is like some of the most brilliant people worked for Barcelona. Forsheimer, most people know Andy, Sasha, Scott Lawton, Halberg. These people are brilliant. They're brilliant people. They were willing to take a lot of risks when other people weren't. They're very, very cognizant of the world and what's going on. And I worked for them when the recession hit. There was a lot of empathy behind the company. And it was like, all right, if people can't afford it, that's fine. We want them to come in and enjoy themselves. And we're going to put our arms around them and we're going to love them. And, you know, what Barcelona gave me was like, it was this pinnacle of my career at a point where like, all right, I had worked at Gramercy in some really good restaurants doing amazing food. But as a cook, you don't really ever learn the business side. Then I went to work for Capitol Grill, and this was all by design. I wanted to work for a company now that would teach me business. So I went and I worked for the Capitol Grill because I was like, what a business world to learn from. And then after that, I got to put both together and go work for Barcelona, which was like, okay, you're going to be the chef or GM of your restaurant. It's yours. And you're going to be responsible for every fucking thing that happens in that restaurant. And that's really what they do for you. And a lot of people get spit out. A lot of people left. It's super high pressure. I can't speak for it today. I'm just saying what it was when I was working there. But it's a crash course in owning your own restaurant or running your own restaurant. And it's amazing because it's for me, it was like putting all those great things together. So great company. Love tapas. At the time, they weren't even a thing when I started with the company. So
they're so hot now.
How I got the job is I actually locked myself in a library for 2 days. Reading about what the hell tapas were, Jose Andres had a book out, and there was maybe one other book. I made up this whole menu for my tasting interview. And then I think one dish into my interview, Sasha says, can you just do me a favor? And I had like all this stuff planned out. Couldn't sleep at night because I'm going to plan this because it's for a job. Like, so if you're not familiar, anybody listening with the tasting, you literally go in and you cook food for the people that are possibly going to hire you. And if your food sucks, you're probably not going to get a job. Okay. That's the best way to put it. Sasha just stops me and he goes, can you do me a favor? Can you just make me a steak and French fries? I'm like, what the fuck? Like, I just planned all this like intricate stuff. And man, this took me 2 days. Like, this guy just wants a steak and French fries. So I made him a steak and French fries, basted it the way Gramercy taught me. Beautiful, blah, blah, blah. Let it rest, slice it, French fries, season them, give it to him. And he goes, now that's fucking food. And his point was, we're not looking, we'll teach you about tapas, but we need to know that you can season, sear, cook good food. Okay.
It's true.
And that, and honestly, that was it. And it was like, what a great story, because that's how I got my job, was a steak and French fries, not the five other things that I'd planned for this like wine dinner-esque menu of like blah, blah, blah with da, 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 da. You know, it was like,
it's like, yo, can you just, you
that's
know.
It. Can you just cook me? And that's Sasha, if you know him. It's he knows what he wants, and you give it to him.
If you fuck this up,
yeah, exactly.
Goodbye.
So I got my job on a steak and French fries, but great company to work for, was them forever. Went down to DC.
The Barcelona, New Haven.
Yeah.
When I first went, was with my girlfriend, because she loves Barcelona, and I remember I couldn't find the front door.
Yeah, that's
because it blends in with the wall.
Yeah.
I'm like, where's the door? And then we found, you know, then eventually we found it.
But yeah,
I just remember being super like, okay.
Sasha liked that.
When you
was
couldn't
sort of unmarked.
The minute I couldn't find the door, I figured I was in for a good
nice
night. Yeah. Because that was just
those were good. Those
amazing.
Were the days. Some good vibes. Good vibes there.
Yeah, yeah.
So that brought me to DC with them. And I was overseeing the DC restaurant. We kind of knew it was going to be my last year. I wanted to open something. And that's, I opened Coconut Club in DC. For better or worse, basically the best way to describe it was, it was more island vibe, frozen drinks meets Barcelona Bar Taco. So small plates of like poke and spam fried. We had a section on the menu for spam. So we had spam spam fried rice was
talk,
on the menu.
Talk to me about that.
Yeah, so spam
is
in
that
Hawaii.
Popular
is
down
big,
there?
In
is,
Hawaii, it's
gotcha.
Everything.
And, oh, gotcha, gotcha, gotcha.
And if you mention spam to anyone over 50, it's like they'll talk about the Vietnam War with you and how.
Definitely had spam sandwiches.
Like, spam
with,
and army and yeah, anybody who's like.
Yeah,
you know,
with my family in Maine.
You know, like. What do they call it? Like an army brat or somebody who's like grown up, like moving around, like spam was in the family and it was a thing. And, you know, I traveled, I did my due diligence. And anytime I cook food, that's of somebody else's culture. You know, I try to really like immerse myself in it so that I pay its respects. So we tried to keep things pretty classic with a little twist though, like, you know, any way I would to try to make food taste good or be unique a little bit. So those were some of our big sellers and we just mixed it together and we had a good time. And then obviously with Coconut Club's closing, it brings me full circle back home to Connecticut. But that's kind of the whole story. I mean, I'm sure there's a ton of little micro stories in between there and things and lessons learned and all that kind of stuff, but that's really it. So I've been cooking since I was 18. I'm 42 as of last week. So yeah, that's 24 years.
And then in between there, you dabbled a little with Fortina and Christian
Petroni.
Yeah,
Petroni. Yeah. So there you
definitely
go.
Talk to me about your, you know, it's funny because there's a few guests now that I've had that are good friends with them. I'm always talk to me about your friendship with Christian, because like I was telling you before, I got a front row seat to watch his eventual rise to where he is now.
Sure.
From working in Armagh and going to his restaurant all the time from when it first opened to recently.
Yeah, I took a break. I was with Barcelona and we took a break. I forgot after. Oh, it was after I was doing Bar Taco. It wasn't a great fit for me, Bar Taco, because of the food and just kind of the way that it was. You know, I like to create and like do dishes, and like this was something different for me.
Love their cocktails. Oh my God.
No, it's great. And like, I just wanted to learn something different, and you learn systems and you learn, you know, like there's a lot of useful things, but as a creative chef, you don't like, so when you go to Bar Taco, do you know who the chef is?
No.
Do you care?
Kinda. Not, I mean,
no,
I'm,
but you, like not,
I'm one of those people.
But you're saying no, but like my point being is like, you don't know who the chef is. And like,
I don't,
part of me being me and enjoying what I do is
I
that like,
I would love to know.
I like to be at a restaurant that I'm the chef at, where I get to go see people be happy, like going full circle back to my story before. And Bar Taco is not that, like you're not creating dishes and food. It's as far as like every day, the menu stays the same, you know, you bang it out and that's a great experience, but you're never going to go. And that's the beauty of Bar Taco. And my, you know, as a business person, like the beauty of it is you don't care who the chef is because you know you're going and you're going to get consistency. Whether you go to Portchester, Westport, or Atlanta, you're getting the same tacos, same food, same recipes, super delicious, great drinks. That's what you're there for.
Yeah.
So it's that's the business side of it. But for Adam Greenberg and who I am, not the best fit. And like, I'll be frank with you, like, you know, working with me too is not always easy. So like, I'm not sitting here being like, well, you know, they like any relationship, like it wears down after a while. And I definitely wore down that company at times and definitely transition wise too, like as they became more corporate, that became less fun for me. And that's, you know, I like throwing pasta at the wall to see if it sticks. And then as things become more systematic, they want it differently. And I just don't, you know, I don't love that kind of stuff. So
nice.
You know,
yeah. Well, sort of similar to Christian Petroni, you kind of are a Food Network star. I mean, you're the winningest Food Network contestant ever on the Food Network. 5-0.
I think so, yeah.
5-0.
Yeah.
Man.
Pretty good.
How does that feel?
It's pretty awesome.
And how did that all begin? Where did it start?
Take me through all five. The Christian story. So I think it's got to be like 6 years ago now. I think it might be. We only had 5 Barcelonas. And the producer of Chopped brought us all down, all the chefs from every Barcelona to interview to be on Chopped.
Damn.
So Christian was the chef in Greenwich.
Right.
I was the chef in West Hartford. We had a couple other chefs.
That's right.
So we all went down and they chose Christian. They did not choose me. So, or anybody else. They chose Christian to be on. So I just got the producer, the casting director's email and just said, hey, I'll stay in touch. Like,
yeah.
No hard feelings. It is what it is.
Right.
So for no joke, almost 3 years, I was emailing her and just being like, do I need to lose weight? Do I need to do this? Why am I not on? Like at this point, I've known like 15 people that have been on Chopped. And I'm like, listen, I won't embarrass you. Please give me my shot. Like what am I doing wrong? And she just would always say, listen, like there's no formula that I can't tell you what to do or not to do. Like just keep, you know, putting yourself out there and, you know, keep applying and da 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 da. And once you kind of get in with these people too, like, it's a little less crapshoot of like you fill out an application and then you just like randomly get called. Like my application can go directly to a person that they know there. So that helps.
Cool.
So when they say like, keep trying, like you keep trying, but you have a direct connect. Hopefully at that point you've had a relationship with them, but it never really did anything. Cause I told you 3 years, like I'd never been on. And then finally I got my shot. Mm. So I got that email that said, congratulations. And I was like, yay, I'm going to be on.
Nice.
So I went on and won that episode. And it was awesome.
What year was that?
I don't even know anymore, honestly. I want to say 2016.
Okay.
And
you go out to LA, I'm assuming?
No, it's in New York.
Oh, it's in New York.
Yeah,
okay,
yeah.
Cool.
So at the time, the studio was in Chelsea Market, actually. It's
gotcha.
Upstairs.
Cool.
They moved recently. I don't know where they moved. Although I feel like I saw Christian filming in like Nashville. So I feel like they might have moved it to like Nashville.
Gotcha.
But it was in New York. So I filmed that first episode, won that. That's 10,000. It's awesome. And, you know, my attitude and like my personality plays well into this game show. It is a game show. I always try to preface that to people. Like, it doesn't make me a better chef.
And you don't care. You open the basket. You're like, let's go.
That's it. You go.
Who cares?
The show is exactly like you watch it, which I love because I loved watching. That's the one thing. Like, I do not watch a lot of cooking shows.
So you literally find out.
But I like, you find out right there when you open the basket.
Oh,
that's
man.
It. And it plays well to my strengths. And, you know, I've been doing this a long time. And like I always say, like if I'd done it 10 years ago, I don't know if I would have won. But, you know, I'm like an old, matured chef who knows organization and like how to do this. So, and I've cooked a lot of food. So you just kind of like, you open the basket and you go. They never stop you. They never edit. They don't do, it's all real. Clock goes, hands up, done. They interview you after. So they interview you after every single round, ask you how you're doing, like this and that. And I'll say like the first time I was ever on, it was like the girl next to me had lost her boyfriend in like a horrible hiking accident. The other guy had just like come out of rehab from alcoholism.
Oh my God.
And the other girl was like lost her father.
Jeez.
And my story was, I just got engaged and I want to pay for my wedding.
Oh,
so I was like, they said, how you feeling? How you feeling right now in my interview? And I said, well, listen, I understand if I don't win because these guys need it. Like these stories are fucked up. Like, I mean, like I just want to pay for my wedding. Like, I don't know, you know,
damn.
And she looked at me and she was like, we would never have been on this long if we ever did that for that. She goes, we 100%, this is accurate. So how do you feel? I go, well, then I should win this shit. Because, like, I just smoked them, you know? And the way I look at Chopped is, like, it's three rounds, right? So it's like a boxing match. So if you win the first round, you're up. Because there's, in my mind, and I don't know this factually, but there has to be some sort of scoring system. So I think the judges are keeping score behind the thing.
Right.
And then they add it up at the end. So if you win round one, like, you can be a little less on desserts, but, like, you know, but my mindset was never that way. But at least that's how my confidence built up behind the scenes. Was like, if I got through round one and felt really good about it, I was like, oh, like, go get them. Like, blood's in the water. Like, round two, let's go.
That's how I felt with Dan Cardos when he was on Guy's Grocery Games. When he, like, ran up, like, when he got called out with the Hawaiian shirt, and I'm like, oh, forget it.
Yeah.
Like, just awesome. The look on his face, I was like, oh, these people don't even know what they're in for.
And you can smell, I mean, like, honestly, it's like competition. Like, you know when someone's sort of scared or, like, whatever.
Yeah. You can smell the fear.
Yeah, a little bit. And, like, I talk to myself, and I'm like, come on. Like, I get myself pumped up and,
there
like,
you go.
Really hyped. So I won the first one, and then they called me back, like, I think a year or two later, and they did champions round. So they did a tournament. Four episodes, winner of each show goes on to the finale. Finale wins 50,000. And you got to know my attitude to understand that, like, I never thought I'd ever be on the Food Network, never mind once, twice, three times, whatever it is. So I'm going on and I'm like, I like to gamble. Like, I'm so in my mind, I'm like, this is house money. Like, I've already won 10,000. Like, I won a show. Just get past the first round. Like, that's what I always say. Like, just be respectable. Like, don't embarrass yourself. Just go out there and do it. House money, you've already won once. So I filmed on a Tuesday for this champion round. So what they did that week is they filmed Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday.
So this is 2018?
I think so, roughly speaking.
Okay, so
they filmed four episodes, all so we, and then Friday was the championship. So whoever won their episode Thursday,
it was
basically a week.
Oh my god!
But like, you don't see it. So like, I went on Tuesday and I won the semifinal. So they say, all right, now you get a chance to win 50,000 in the finale on Friday. So go home and come back Friday. Whoever did Thursday, and I have so much respect and I know who did it, but whoever did Thursday won Thursday and then had to come back Friday morning to do the finale. And the crazy thing is, by the way, it's like a 14-hour day. It's not like, it's like they keep you there all day. You're doing, like, you're not, like, your interviews take a while and then they have a lunch break and it's union. So like their camera people have breaks and then, you know, you got to have it. So it's like, long. So you meet at like 5:36 in the morning.
Oh my God.
It's just a long, long day. And then I won the semi and then I get to the finale and then I won that one and that was 50,000. And it's crazy because after it, like, I'm like crying. I'm sensitive. I'm like, oh my God. And they're like, well,
you won the tournament of champions.
Yep. So they tell you that and I'm in there and I'm like, hey, Beth, she's the casting director. I go, and I know they're up in the booth or something. Crazy. I'm like, I told you I wouldn't fucking embarrass you. Because, like, it took me years to get on, right? So now I'm like, I'm 3-0. I told you I wouldn't embarrass you. You know, like, and yeah, they're like, we have one more surprise for you. And I thought Christian was going to come out from behind, like, the thing. And it was my wife. They'd called my wife while she was at work in Norwalk. My wife's an executive for Bar Taco. So she was at the corporate offices. She wasn't at the time, but she was anyway.
Gotcha.
So she's been with the company almost like 14 years. So she's risen up the ranks. And
I love Bar Taco. I could
do a whole other pod for her.
The one in Westport.
She's the marketing director.
I go to the one in Westport.
Oh, nice.
In Portchester.
It's great.
Love it.
So shout out, Anna. So they called her while she was at the office. And they're like, we'll send a car. We want you to come down. Adam's in the finale. And they brought the guy who I was up against. They brought his wife in too.
Oh, okay.
So my wife and his wife sat in like a green room waiting to see who won until after.
Damn.
We ended up becoming very close friends with them, actually.
Oh, cool.
He's a really good friend of mine.
Cool.
Andre Fowles, shout out. He's a Jamaican chef in New York City. A lot of guys know him.
Oh, awesome.
I'm sure I can get him on the pod for you sometime.
Oh, that'd be cool.
He's the best.
I would love a Jamaican chef. I was in a reggae band for a couple of years.
Sick, dude. So you guys, he's amazing.
Yeah.
He's like basically the U.S. like ambassador chef for Jamaica. Like he's,
and the keyboardist.
He's with Kwame and doing, like, he's doing a bunch of stuff right now.
The keyboardist of the reggae group I was in. Shout out to Drix. I don't know if you listen to this, but he's actually the current keyboardist for the Whalers. So.
Oh, sick.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've heard of him. Not the Hartford Whalers, folks. Yeah, not the Hartford Whalers.
Yeah, you know, Bob Marley and the Whalers.
Big deal. So we stayed in touch. It's like, it's cool. You make friendships. You're there for like 14, 15 hours together. The other girl that we were with together all day, we're three of us are still good friends. It's cool. You get
Thank you so much for listening to part number one of a two-part podcast episode with my buddy, Chef Adam Greenberg. Stay tuned next week for part number two and a continuation of where we left off in our conversation. Yet again, another episode of Sweeten Up is in the books. Thank you so much for listening. Be sure to rate, review, and subscribe anywhere you get your podcasts. We would greatly appreciate your feedback and support. As a reminder, you can play the podcast with the help of your smart speaker by simply saying, "Play the podcast Sweeten Up with Jeff Spencer." Thank you as always to my best friends, the guys who make it all possible, post-production and music Morgan Lutzi, production and art director Kurt Vinci, editor and writer Nick Passacretta, and a special thanks as always to Devin Cipelli. As I said at the top, we will see you next week with part number two of our chat with Adam Greenberg. And as a quick teaser, be sure to set your calendars for Friday, December 3rd, as we will be chatting with United States Representative of the 4th Congressional District here in Connecticut, the great and powerful Congressman Jim Himes. But until then, you know the deal. Stay safe, stay healthy, love you all, peace.